radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
All right, welcome to firehouse.com's podcast live from Firehouse World 2010 in San Diego. This is Ed Hadfield, and we are here today to talk about high-rise firefighting utilizing the regional approach. As many of you know, that the throughout the United States, many organizations cannot fight or battle a high-rise fire alone. It has to utilize a regional approach to accomplishing those tasks. And so today we're going to talk about some different ways of combining resources from throughout a region to initiate a firefight in a high-rise occupancy or multi-story occupancy. We might even venture off and talk a little bit about some of the wide rises that we're battling today throughout the United States. We're very fortunate today to have with us a couple of experts in the field. We have Captain Wes Kitchell. Wes?
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Good.
Glad to be here today.
Good. Good to have you. And Wes, you came from Northern California area, the Santa Rosa Fire Department. Can you tell us a little bit about the area you came from and how you guys approached some of the high-rise?
Certainly. Santa Rosa is the largest city in Sonoma County. Sonoma County is located north of San Francisco on the coast. We have our department's somewhat of a mid-sized department, 11 engines, 2 trucks, and we're surrounded by combination and volunteers. So training, you know, so that everybody comes on a mutual aid basis, has a playbook that they can go with so that they understand how we set up the incident and how they can assist in how they can play into a role of the overall incident command system and be proactive in the approach of fighting that fire in that building is real important to us because we don't have resources that a major metropolitan city would have where we can use our own folks trained alike, same pieces of equipment, same playbook, so to speak. We're dealing with an unknown a lot of times with our mutual aid. So the regional approach is real important to us as far as trying to ensure that everybody gets there, can do the job somewhat in a like fashion, and make sure that everybody's safe because they don't end up in places they shouldn't be.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Wes, you bring up a couple of good points, is that I don't think that a lot of people recognize that high-rise itself is outside of the major metropolitan cities. I know that particularly when we have an opportunity to travel around, we see that with the tribal-based casino operations mm-hmm. that are going on all throughout the United States, and they're outstanding programs, and many of them have really outstanding fire departments associated with them, but they are in places that are somewhat isolated from the major metropolitan area, and they are in and itself high-rise and wide-rise type occupancies. And really going to these organizations and being able to have the opportunity to visit these outstanding departments, we see the challenges that they face. And if the particular region that they're working in has not established a functional response plan to an emergency in one of those facilities, oftentimes they can be kind of left hanging. And I want to kind of utilize that to segue to our next guest, which is Lieutenant Todd Wernette from the Seattle Fire Department. And Todd, you've been recognized throughout the United States as being that of somewhat of an expert in teaching these high-rise operations to some of those facilities that we've talked about, those tribal-based organizations and some of those smaller agencies throughout the United States. And people seem to have the opportunity to bring you in and look at their response plan and assist them in developing some operational procedures. Of course, Seattle is a major metropolitan organization that has a lot of high-rise. In fact, we understand that you're assigned to the downtown truck and that you run a lot of that high-rise. But along those lines, do you find that in the Seattle area, outside of downtown Seattle, that the regional approach works very well for high-rise and multi-rise structures?
Yeah, it does. In our area, Seattle being the largest department in the state, we have three truck companies of the downtown core with double houses with an engine that we make most of our responses with. But we have a zone as opposed to individual departments. We have zone responses as, say, Seattle is Zone 5, South King County that would come in with us is Zone 3. So when we call for a third, fourth, fifth alarm, we'll call for a zone response, and several smaller county and districts and fire city fire departments will come together, and they'll come up as a strike team, a zone strike team, and then we'll assign them as they come in.
Mm-hmm. That's very much the same, and I'll just kind of segue to myself on that, is that here in the San Diego County area, we have what is, you know, basically considered the North County or the North Zone area. That encompasses a number of cities. And then we have the East County area, which also encompasses a number of the cities. We have kind of the rural East area and rural North areas as well, which happens to have a lot of the high rises from the tribal-based casinos. And then, of course, we have the metro area and the South Bay region. So very similar in nature in that approach. And what we have found is that trying to utilize the same type of response plan that you just discussed works the best, because by and large, even San Diego City being the largest organization in the county itself, handling a major event in a high rise is going to require at least 100 people operating on that structure, whether they're actually functioning in the capacity of the firefight, or they're handling the command structure, or based upon the type of based upon the type of occupancy it is, we could even be dealing with a large MCI. So no one department can really generate enough people to handle that response plan. One of the challenges I've found in that we even find in our community, as well as throughout the United States, is trying to get everybody on the same plan. And so that everybody's aware of it, because as you're trying to develop an operational plan that everybody can buy off on, it seems like that's the biggest challenge, not only politically, and I think we have to speak frankly to that, but also from a training standpoint and from an adoption standpoint into an organization. So my question to you guys would be, having developed these plans or worked with these plans together or in your own agencies, what have you found to be the biggest stumbling block in implementing these plans from a regional standpoint?
Go ahead, Tom.
Well, one of the things we changed just a few years ago is when we had these strike teams come in from different zones, we would initially have all of our staffing go to the major event, to the high rise. And in Seattle, we have approximately 216 to 220 people on shift daily. So when we take that 100 people, that would be truly a minimum that you're going to use to fight a high rise fire effectively and safely. We would bring all of our people into the call, and then we would backfill the rest of our city, which is encompasses about 96 square miles, with outlying departments, and they would not know our area. So through this plan that we developed, we now leave our staffing, take what's necessary, leave the outlying staffing from our own department there, and then we bring the strike teams directly into the event, and then we assign them with Seattle officers or senior firefighters to help run the plan. The only city in the area that we drill with on a regular basis is Bellevue, which is another large metropolitan area, which has several high rises, and we run our programs basically the same way. So they're the first strike team to come in, and then the north and south zones will come in, and we'll assign people to help direct them, because there are 20 to 25 departments in our county, and it can be difficult to just time-wise, because we have career departments, accommodation departments, volunteer departments, and to bring everybody up to the same level of training can be difficult. So we found that it's best to take some of our staffing with our radios and our radio frequencies, which are different than everybody else's, and we haven't been able to trunk all those together yet effectively, that we still have to surrender that some of our on-duty staff to as liaisons with each department, and that's how we've dealt with it to make sure that we can get communications and get the orders through.
Yeah. Wes?
Well, we're in a little different boat. Obviously, our department's not as big. We have 40 on duty every day. And if we had an event in one of our high rises or large area buildings, we're going to pretty much strip our on duty staff to get there. They're going to be the first three alarms. And then we will backfill accordingly into our stations from our neighbors, as well as a mutual aid would come into the staging area. Now, like Todd says, they're not necessarily versed in the high-rise part of the tactics because basically we're residential bedroom community around Santa Rosa, and our area is a bedroom community to San Francisco and the Bay Area, a lot of it. So they don't have the larger above ground buildings that we would have. And it's difficult for them to maybe adapt residential tactics to a larger open area floor, center core construction, things like that. So we would marry them up with our officers, very similar to how he's talking about. We have common communications because of our countywide radio system. So that is not an issue. It's just an issue of mindset and what you're used to doing and how you train to do that. It's difficult to take residential tactics and apply that to a high-rise or a large area building because it's just apples and oranges. And underestimating that and putting them in a position for where they can't be successful because they don't have the proper tactics or experience is probably the biggest thing with our particular geographic area, just because of the issue of experience level, staffing, and who you're getting. Like I said, we're surrounded with combination departments. Once that engine company, on-duty engine company, shows up, everything else is volunteer companies. And you know, they can be very aggressive as well. It has nothing to do with career volunteers. It's the issue of experience level when they get there and just what they're used to doing. So the biggest thing is the management of the incident and not putting them in a position where they're going to be compromised or aren't going to be able to be successful in the task that's given them.
You know, you bring up an outstanding point, Wes, and I know having sat on a curriculum development committee and a working group that developed a high-rise policy for a county that was faced with similar challenges. They had a couple cities within the county that were career-staffed. They ran 4-0 on the engines. Although they didn't have very large organizations, they did have those staffing levels and that. And then they were surrounded by combination paid call volunteer companies, which were all very active, very well trained, and great people. However, as you know, and I'm going to ask you the question is, when we bring that residential mindset to the high rise type of occupancy, whether it's a compartmentalized high rise or whether it's an open floor plan high rise, we tend to find that is where our comfort level is exceeded. And having been in training for a significant period of time, what is your opinion on developing a regional approach to training a region on that? What have you found to be the best practice?
Well, I think that the difficult part is getting everybody to agree that it's needed. If it's never happened, if an incident's never happened, it's sometimes difficult to get a lot of buy-in. And I think that's a challenge. Once everybody agrees, yes, we're going to be there for this event that happens once every 10, 15 years in some certain areas, or weekly or monthly in others. Once they get the buy-in that they're going to be there, then I think the training becomes somewhat easier because they've already agreed and accepted the fact that they're going to be a party to this these operations. They're going to be a party to them anyway just because of the mutual aid system. But it's the fact that they have the buy-in and their mind is already thinking there. That's the difference between the buy-in and the not buy-in. Then it's an issue of just education. You need to educate them as what's different about an open floor building, a center core building, being off the ground, using systems. What are standpipes? How are they different? Why do we need large lines versus our standard inch and three-quarter attack line? You know, on and on and on. There's all of those issues that need it. And it's an educational thing because they don't have necessarily buildings that could easily build up the type of fire volume, the problems with smoke travel, with heat travel, with your MCI issue of multiple victims in a building, those kinds of things. It's not maybe not a norm, so it's not something that's thought about or trained at on a local level.
Right.
And that's one of the harder things, I think, for a region to come up with. And then finding time. Where do we put this? Mm-hmm. It's an incident in some regions that doesn't happen. For a decade, it won't happen. And so if it doesn't happen, it's always on the back burner.
You know, you brought up a good point. I want to go to Todd here on this one. Systems. Systems, I know when I was in the companies, the AO or the truck engineer was typically assigned to systems control as part of the lobby functions. He was assigned to the fire control room. And ideally, if the building had an on-site 24-hour engineer, they were married up at the hip. Todd, given the complexity of the systems that you're seeing out there in Seattle running, you know, multiple alarms on a regular basis, do you see a need for us to be giving some type of education, some type of training on proper systems control? Or do you feel that it's something that, you know, people can just kind of walk in, get an idea, and start running?
Well, systems can be daunting. Every high-rise in the city of Seattle has a different kind of system. Some are very user-friendly, and they do not have 24-hour engineers. Others are complicated, and the engineers are there to walk you through it. They will actually take control of the system for you as you as the needs arise, whether they shut a ventilation system off above or below, pressurize the stairwells, turn the stairwell systems off. But what I think has been most beneficial is our State Fire Academy now, a portion of all the academies that they're teaching, where a majority of our firefighters, except for the large municipalities, send their recruits through training. They go through high-rise operations. They have basic systems classes to understand, silence the alarms, understand how to read the alarms, and mostly when to call for help, because it's really easy to get overwhelmed when the overhead speakers are telling everybody to evacuate, the alarms are going off, you can't hear the firefighters on the fire floor talk because the alarms are going off. So and also junior colleges, you know, when you're looking to promote or trying to continue your education, several of the junior colleges in their fire science programs have entire semester-long classes on fire alarm systems. So and unfortunately it's trial by fire, or you go to pay your own way to go to school and get that education.
Right. You know, it's I think systems control is one of those components to high-rise firefighting that is often overlooked. And I can say that those engineers, those AOs that were assigned there that really knew how to operate the building itself made things a lot better, a lot quicker, and really fought the fire to help to fight the fire for us. And so I would encourage anybody that's listening to this podcast to get out there and really work with those building engineers, work with those people to understand those systems and how they can benefit you. We are pretty excited. We're joined by our next guest. He was down there on the floor signing autographs and kissing babies. And that is Andoni Castros from Sac Metro Fire. Andoni, welcome to the podcast. As you know, we're up here, we're talking about high-rise firefighting, utilizing a regional approach. And coming from Sac Metro, which is a, and correct me if I'm wrong, a number of departments that have merged together into one fine organization in the Northern California area over a period of time. How do you find up in your area the regional approach to high-rise, multi-story occupancy firefighting, and even some of our wide-rise occupancies works for you? Because you are a shift battalion chief. You're out there in the companies. You're running around in the buggy. How's it work for you?
Well, thanks for including me in your discussion. First, let me say that that's one of the only reasons I wanted to participate welcome the opportunity is because it is a regional approach we're talking about, and that is critical to my agency because, I'll be honest, we really don't have high rises. My department is 417 square miles, almost about 650,000 people, but it's everything from industrial to commercial, residential, and we've got vast open eye zones, so we have everything. The only thing we don't have a lot of in my jurisdiction is what I would call a high-rise. Now, we have some, obviously. We have hospitals, we have hotels, commercial buildings, so we do have them. But the regional approach becomes very critical for us as an agency because we are married up with Sacramento City Fire. Sacramento City is really the resident experts on high-rise in our region, and they host an annual high-rise drill. And that high-rise drill has been pivotal to really open the eyes to everyone in the region as to what high-rise firefighting is all about, how important it is to get everybody on the same page, how resource-intensive it is. And I had the opportunity about, seven years ago, I was in our training division, and I was part of a regional group that put together this regional high-rise training for the year. And we had some outstanding firefighters, many of whom are at the conference this week, who took it upon themselves to actually build a mock-up inside this nine-story parking garage that we had. We took a nine-story parking garage, and I think it was on the seventh floor. We went ahead and built about a 3,000, 4,000 square foot building within the within the parking garage. And what they did was these firefighters went in on their days off. They framed in not only hallways and occupancies and offices and mock-ups, but they framed in and plumbed in areas for smoke machines, for lighting. We had theatrical sound. We had people moulaged. The local college, Sac State, I think it was, or American River College, provided their theater. School provided students who we moulaged and decked out, and these folks acted as victims. They were responsible parties on scene, on the fire floor, victims in the lobby, and it was an outstanding opportunity because not only do we have the smoke and the simulated fire conditions, but we also had victims, and we also were able to flow water, which, as you all know, is on a drill is not very common on a high-rise drill. It's different than when you're in an abandoned building or you're in a parking lot or something. So we're on the seventh floor, flowing two and a halves, and stretching two and a halves. And we were able to time over the course of an entire month, over doing dozens and dozens of scenarios, how long does it really take us to get water on the fire from rakes being set on the street? And what are the systems we have to employ and everything? So I've really got to give credit to Sacramento City Fire, even though I come from Metro. It's like Coke and Pepsi, you know, it's that friendly rivalry, LA City, LA County. We have that kind of going on in that North California area. It's typical firefighters. But I got to give them props for welcoming everybody and really being the host agency because they really have the big target hazard in the region. And they've opened up our eyes to what it's really about. And because we have them, but not to the degree that they do. So it's been really good.
You know, along those lines, and I have to agree with you, is over the last probably 5 or 6 years, I've heard nothing but outstanding comments about that annual drill that Sac City puts on. And the Sac City firefighters do an outstanding job of high-rise operations as well as all operations across the board.
Great firefighters.
So, you know, I would encourage anybody, and I didn't know to the depth of which you guys did the drill until just now, I would encourage anybody who is looking at putting on a drill, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, contact Sac City and ask them, you know, how they did it, because they've obviously done a great job of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, along those lines, Jerry Tracy was here, I think it was, I want to say 2 years ago, we were at the Chili Cook-Off, and he told me that they were getting ready to do a bunch of high-rise studies with NIST. And Jerry Tracy put out the did a bunch of studies with NIST on Governor's Island and high-rise occupancies and high-rise firefighting on wind-driven fires. Now, I wasn't on the particular incident, but in my community right now, we have 10 20-story high-rise occupancies that sit basically right on the sand. And 5 of the 10 are non-sprinklered. Type 1 occupancies, compartmentalized, all residential, permanent residential. And the last fire fatality that occurred within that occupancy was just that. It was an event in which the individual exited into the common corridor. The front door was left open. And once the window, the main slider window, let loose because of the intensity of the fire, that onshore wind, and as you know, this we probably get a good 10 mile an hour wind depending upon the time of the day, literally pushed that fire into that corridor like a blowtorch. And the firefighters that were on the nozzle said that it was like a blowtorch. It took all they could to get the door from the stairwell back closed so that they can, you know, regroup and mount their attack. How do we as a fire service, and Wes touched on it earlier, how do we get personnel that normally don't deal with high-rise operations? And I think when we're talking in this podcast, we have to recognize that we really are talking to those that normally don't do it. How do we in the fire service get those that normally don't respond, don't train to, don't have the policies and procedures in place to recognize the complexities and the hazards that are going to be faced on these types of occupancies and threats? And I'll start off is two things. I think first and foremost, if you are dealing with any regional approach, no matter where you're located, it's incumbent that the operations chiefs in those areas come up with one plan.
Yeah.
I know that in Butte County, they've done it. I know that in Orange County, they've done it. I know that in San Luis Obispo County, they've done it. Those counties as a whole, the entire county, is on one operational plan. Okay. And it's dependent upon the complexities that are facing that county. I also believe that it's incumbent that as these facilities, whether they're wide rise or high rise, mid rise, multi rise, whatever it may be, I believe that as a regional approach, it's incumbent that we really start looking at standardizing our equipment. And the reason is because I have been on multiple drills, multiple events where you're mixing Inner Spiro bottles with MSAs, with Scotts, with Draegers.
Yeah.
And I don't care what staging tries to do.
Right.
Unless you are truly the staging Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get mixed up.
Yeah.
And where I have seen success is when counties or regions utilize the same equipment, the same nozzles, the same hose, the same BAs at a minimum. Now, from there, we can discuss it. But I open it up to the group. What are your thoughts?
I agree. That makes it much, much easier that when you have all the same equipment, the same training standards, that kind of a thing. I think you really reduce the potential for calamity at these types of incidents. But like the fire service, steeped in tradition, one of our traditions is that changing something is often difficult and painful. And then it gets into who's right. Mm-hmm. And how do we come up with that? So I don't know that there's a canned answer to the question.
I don't think
question.
There's a canned answer, but I think we can – I think you hit the nail on the head. But right now, Sacramento, the region's going through some of this, past, present, future, actually. Mm-hmm. Not only are we doing the high-rise drills, but as we speak, there's a very successful regional SOG team that's been put together. The four main agencies, fire agencies in the Sacramento County are Sac City, Sac Metro, Cosumnes, and Folsom. And we've put together a team of subject matter experts from each agency. The ones who are, you know the guys I'm talking about, the ones that are fired up, the ones Absolutely. That are into it, talk about it, eat it, breathe it, sleep it. They have street credit in their agencies. So these guys are on this team, and what they're doing is they're coming to the table. They're saying, let's leave our egos at the door. Take the patch off. Take the badge off. Take the bugles off. Let's talk fire, and let's start with the low-hanging fruit. And I think that's to answer the question of how do we get past the ego factor, which all firefighters have. I think you start with the low-hanging fruit first. I think you go over the easy stuff. Build some momentum. And that's what this group has done. I think they started with something as simple as a roll call. How do we do roll call on a tactical channel? do we do two rigs at a time, three rigs at a time? How does the battalion chief conduct roll call? Because something as simple as that, as benign as that sounds, that's the very first thing we do on any response in my system, is that we all go to a tactical channel in route. Unlike some agencies, some go on scene. We go en route. And from the very beginning, the differences start. And some do it two, some do it three, and whatever. So we've built this momentum. Another area, and they're hitting the more important issues like interior attack, RIC, and ventilation. They're working their way towards the higher hanging fruit. The other thing that we've done is, you mentioned SCBAs. About 4 years ago, I got to have the privilege of working on a regional team to pick a new SCBA for the region. We had UOC grant funds. We picked a BA, an SCBA, and some of us had to turn in the old ones and get the new ones. And again, it was the ego thing. But everyone was able to, it was a big victory, because a lot of us on the group were really proud to say, hey, we all checked our egos at the door, regardless of how we felt about our own breathing apparatus or how we felt about the other department's breathing apparatus, we were able to put that away. And we now are all, like eight agencies now in that whole region, are in the same breathing apparatus. So like you said, when a high-rise does happen, the devil's in the details. And that's the stuff that's going to make or break an incident. And so I would say, just to kind of answer your question in one way, is to say we got to start with the low-hanging fruit and get the easy stuff out of the way and pick the right people to represent your agency, the ones that work well in the sandbox with others, who can put their ego aside. We all know there's certain people that just have a hard time putting their ego in the box when they walk in the room. Well, those probably aren't the best guys to pick to be on a regional team.
Well, I guess I'll be the only lone dissenter about how we're steeped in tradition, unchanged by progress in our county, King County, our region. We do lots of things. They're group projects. Our technical rescue, our hazardous material. It's a regional system. Our firefighting capabilities, I think, lag behind. The easiest one, the self-contained breathing apparatus, we use one kind in the entire county. So when it comes to exchanging bottles and doing RIC operations and transfills, it that works out absolutely fine. But what we have in Seattle is the staffing. Mm-hmm. Majority of all the other departments are smaller. They run, one officer, two firefighters. We're 4-0 every apparatus in the city. We'll send 46 people to a single family residential, where everybody else will get 8 to 12.
Yeah.
So our tactics are a little bit different. In some cases, much more aggressive. And the tradition part is, and everybody here knows how big cities work, if we didn't come up with it, it's not right.
Yeah.
You know, and we're slowly but surely changing as the guard, the old guard is retiring. We're getting a lot more aggressive, progressive company officers and battalion chiefs that we are slowly changing that. We are working in committees with other departments through the grant system where the big city gets the grant and then they disseminate it throughout the county because you usually have to have one group or city write the grant. Mm-hmm. So we work well in that area, but we fell behind in some of our tactical considerations when it comes to smaller and larger departments because we assume that everybody's going to do it the same way as we do.
Right.
Yeah. You know, let me kind of ask a question to the group. One of the things that we seem to identify and kind of touched on it was the working group component is how do we as a fire service and this is probably more geared towards where Wes worked, is that how do we assure that our people that are responding to these incidents from combination and volunteer agencies, which we rely heavily upon in many parts of the world, are adequately prepared. And I know that in a lot of counties and a lot of regions, we have countywide wildland drills. And obviously, in Sacramento, they have a high-rise drill. I know that down here in San Diego, the North Zone, Zone 4, and the Metro Zone, you know, they all have their independent high-rise drills. But is there some way that maybe we can, you know, how we red card people, is there some way that we can assure that people are at least getting the training through maybe an F-STEP program? Because we know that the California State Fire Marshal is doing away with the high-rise command module out of the chief officer curriculum. Is there some way that we can F-step people in this high-rise training and at least assure that they're getting it somewhere and that the curriculum is quantifiable and meets objectives?
You asking me?
Yeah, that
you're looking at me.
You're looking at me, you know. And I'm asking you, Wes, because you have for many, many years taught through the California State Fire Marshal. You know that program, and I guess maybe I'm throwing you a softball here. Is the F-STEP program? If we're going to do away with the command concept of high rise, you know, I understand that. I get that. But we need to be training people on above ground firefighting. Mm-hmm. And I see a void there. And what's your opinion on developing an F-STEP program?
My opinion of can it be done? Yes, it can be done. Okay. It's the how that's going to be the difficult part. And the how is because, generally speaking, like we heard, you know, we're talking about the regional approach. In the Sacramento area, there's four departments that are involved, and they're all career departments for the most part.
Yeah, those four are.
And because of that, it goes out like a wave. The rings will go out and touch the other people that are not in that particular area. I was sitting here just making little marks on a piece of paper thinking about all the departments that would respond to an incident within my city that I worked in, and it would be nine jurisdictions right off the bat. There's nine, and most of them are volunteer, not combination. And beyond that, there's probably another dozen that would show up, all volunteer. So now you get into the regional approach of some of this stuff is just equipment-based.
Yeah.
They don't have a large diameter hose. They don't have, you know, the equipment and the tactical mindset to be able to look at that in the same way. So is a class like an F-STEP class in the state of California something that can be done? Yes. Should it be done? Probably, because there isn't that standard. Now, the tough part is, for some departments, and you know, I'm going to just kind of take it in a direction here that where we have to look at this. I know there's a true definition for a high rise, that it's, you know, that it meets a criteria, but in, if you look at some very rural departments, a four-story residential care facility might as well be a 40-story building.
Yeah.
And that's a reality because it has certain things in it that they're not used to dealing with, even though it's fully sprinklered and that's what a lot of people hang their hat on. It's a sprinkled building. It's never going to burn. Well, okay.
Yeah.
That's not a for sure thing either.
Right.
So we have to look at it in a number of ways. We can talk just about high rise, you know, over 75 feet, systems, et cetera, what the traditional textbook is. But to set up an F-step class for that, what's your audience? It's pretty small. You know, it's metropolitan areas, Southern California, Sacramento, San Francisco Bay Area, where you're looking at those types of buildings in mass. Is there an, should there be a class that covers those and perhaps the other more low or mid-rise, you know, multiple story buildings, and how to tactically approach that? I think that's a part of the reality as well. Yes, that should be it, because on these rural areas, these things are popping up. The casino that you were talking about early on, they plunk those down in the middle of rural America.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there it is. And then there's small departments around it that are expected to respond to that, that may or may not be equipped, trained, staffed to be able to pull that off. And where's their mutual aid coming from?
Right.
And how well is that staffed, equipped, and what's the timeliness of that? So, yes, can it be done? Yes. How do we approach it, and where do we draw the line, and who is our audience? That's probably the biggest nut to crack, is who is the audience that we're looking to get because of the geographic location of most of these buildings.
Well, you know, Andoni brought up, you know, he kind of said, and, you know, well, we don't have a lot of, you know, we don't have high rise, you know, but we do have, you know, multi-story occupancies. We have hospitals and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe I'm the odd duck, which wouldn't be the first time. But I truly believe you don't have to have the traditional high rise.
No, not at all.
To implement at least 80% of your high-rise operational plan.
I agree.
And
yeah.
Everybody's got a Hampton Inn,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a Hampton Inn is typically 4 to 5 stories. You know, you have center hallway, multi-story, multi-compartment mm-hmm. occupancies, which are typically accessed center core or off of your stand-piped stairwells off the ends of the buildings. And so maybe we just lose the word high-rise and we say an F-step program for multi-rise fire ground tactics and that. And my belief is that if we are going to really look at regionalizing and an approach to firefighting, we have to have an understanding of what goes on in these buildings, and maybe they don't have a systems room, but even if they don't, the firefighting tactics the same.
Yeah, exactly. They still got systems. They just don't have a nice little suite where it's all located, you know.
Right.
They still have systems.
Right.
And see, that's I think where your audience lies.
Right.
It's not the metro departments.
Mm-hmm.
They've had those for years. They've got processes, as we've heard. SAC does a great job. LA does a great job. The Bay Area, San Francisco, mm-hmm. Oakland, all those areas that have those buildings that have been there for 30, 40 years, they know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, their neighbors don't come to play. They deal with it on their own, or they have a regionalized approach like the Sacramento area does.
Mm-hmm.
It's the rest of our particular state, but I think this goes beyond California. It goes, you know, everywhere out in the rest of the world, in this country, the people that are listening to this, they can look in their own jurisdiction. I once heard from a chief that I took a class from that if you drive by a high rise on your way to work within 20 minutes of that high rise, if that's your firehouse, you'll be at that high rise when it's on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you need to have those tactics and you need to have that training. And I think that's what we need to look at as far as developing curriculum, whether it's here or any other state out there in the United States, is looking at the 4- and 5-story buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Because the department, it's relative to the department. It might as well be fit, like I said, 50 stories. You have the potential for an MCI. Mm-hmm. You have the potential for vertical smoke movement. You have systems, standpipes mm-hmm. and the like,
yep.
alarm systems, all of that. It's the same. It's just yep. on a more compact scale, but probably the fire department's on a more compact scale.
Right.
And that can be as overwhelming as of whether it is on the 20th floor of a 40-story building.
Well, historically in the city of Seattle, most of our fire responses where we've had actual fires in high rises have been, you know, 4 or 5 stories and below, you know, because that's where we have all of our businesses. We have restaurants on the first floor. So we have a full commercial high rise response and we show up and it's on the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th. So you're looking at, it could just as easily be a multifamily residential 3, 4, 5 stories. You know, we have all the downtown core. Again, 60% of all the new high-rises in the city of Seattle are going into my first new district. South Lake Union area is all high-rise condos. And it's all taxpayer. We've got a grocery store on the first floor, 30 stories above it, because it's all about walkability downtown. It's not how you commute. It's all about walking to work. So, you know, more residential, not open floor plan, commercial, high-rise office space. We do have a number of those, but all the new high-rises in the city are predominantly residential. So that's compartmentalized, again, center hallway. We have all the systems, but again, they're designed for 8-head activation. Anything over that, it overwhelms the system, and you're fighting fire.
You know, it's interesting that Todd mentions the changing dynamic in the high rise. I think all of us kind of grew up. Wes grew up before us, but
thank you very little.
I think all of us. I had to throw one out there. Come on. I think all of us grew up with the understanding of, you know, high rise was a business. Was offices, was the open floor plan, you know, and it was a big building and everybody left at 5 o'clock. Interestingly enough, 20 years ago, Tom Brennan did a class in the city of Carlsbad. And it was the beginning, I think, of East Meets West. And Fire Chief Mark Revere, mm-hmm. who was a training captain at the time, brought Tom Brennan, Chief Brennan, out at the and to do a class. And we went out to dinner with him, and Chief Brennan told me, he said, before the end of your career, you will see a reurbanization of your cities. And he said, you will see high-rises and multi-story occupancies popping up in areas you didn't think you would ever see. And I asked him, you know, I said, well, why is that? And he says, because people will get tired of commuting. And, you know, he's right. He's right, is that particularly in the San Diego County area, a report was just generated. It was just published 2 days ago that said that San Diego County is going to experience, you know, almost a 60% growth plan throughout the county. And of that, 80% of that growth will be multi-story, multi-residential occupancies. Because people, first of all, there's very little land. And secondly, everybody wants to live here. And lastly, people don't want those big commutes. So they're going to be willing to live in condos, in townhouses, in multi-story residential occupancies. And anybody that's visited San Diego recently, you see multiple high-rise occupancies that are all residential. In fact, excuse my ignorance, but I can't think of any current multi-story building going up in San Diego that is non-residential. It might be the businesses down below and some restaurants, first floor, second floor, but above that is residential. So we're going to see that. We're going to see exactly what Todd talked about, mm-hmm. it may not be the 40 stories, but it's definitely going to be multi-story.
Well, certainly, if you walk out the front doors of this convention center and look up, every high-rise building for about 8 blocks is residential. In relationship to where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, they just raised our cap from 20 stories to 40 stories for residential in the city of Seattle. Mm-hmm. So everything is going up, and it's going up fast, and they're sold before they're completed. The entire building condominiums is sold out.
Right. And we're seeing this, and this is why I think the regional approach is so important. We're seeing this in cities and towns and areas throughout the United States that historically have not had this. They're creating town centers. Mm-hmm. You know, the new genre of building is the town center.
Yep.
Where, you know, rather than have urban sprawl, they're bringing people together, and they want that community feel in that. And so what we have is again, maybe it's not the traditional what we thought was high rise, but we're seeing the multi rise. Todd, you also brought up, and guys, you know, help me out here. We brought up the walk up. You know, most of our fires, we walked up in that. And I can't remember the exact floor, but, you know, one of the biggest West Coast operations, high-rise operations, the big event for us was the first interstate fire. And help me out here, guys, but if I recall, I don't believe that was over the 15th floor.
They stopped it at 16, I believe.
So, yeah.
So 12, 13, 14, and 15 were fully involved, and they stopped it at 16. I believe that was the number.
Right. So the big events, you know, the events in Houston that they've had, the events in L.A., events in Frisco, I mean, they haven't been on the 40th floor. These have been on relatively lower floors. And even at the lower floors, look how taxing these events have been. How taxing. Now, you know, obviously we've had events that were higher in that in the United States. But let's take for a second here, and I'm going to defer to Todd real quick because he's the one currently doing it. Let's talk a little bit about walking up and elevators.
Well, that's interesting. I have lots of discussions about elevator operations from Central and Southern California, Los Angeles, and I've taken classes from Los Angeles chiefs and from yourself about how the California firefighters do it, how they unbutton their coats, you know, loosen everything up, and they're running stairs. I mean, they're clearing every floor, 10, 12, 15, 20, 25 floors on automatic fire alarms. Well, in Seattle, we use elevator operations exclusively. Now, anything usually below 5 to 7 floors, by the time and as opposed to what you guys do here, our first in on a what we call an AFA or automatic fire alarm, we send a 1-in-1, one engine, one truck, or we'll send a 2-1-in-1, two engines, one truck, one chief, and the first in company officer establishes command and goes to the panel. So the first in, usually the engine officer, establishes command, goes to the panel. One of his tail boarders takes control of the elevator. If it, you know, it's recalled, takes control of the elevator. We establish where it is. We test the elevator system. We go in, we close the door, we open the door, we look for smoke, we go through the process. And then we generally, unless it's a elevator control room itself, a heat or smoke in the elevator control room, we'll take the elevator to 2 floors below the fire floor. So we take it up. We may stop halfway up and look at the floor plan, and then go the rest of the way up to 2 floors below. Then we walk up the last 2 floors. We never, unless it's a confirmed false alarm and we're going to just reset a pull station or something like that, we always stop 2 floors below and walk that last 2 floors for safety. We try to use banked elevators if possible, but we commonly use, because I'll run as many as 13 to 15 automatic fire alarms a day in my first in area. So to be honest with you, I generally am not going to run 15 to 25 or 30 stories each time we go up 15 times a day. I wouldn't be near as robust as I am if I did that. So
thanks for saying that. Cause yeah.
There's a softball for you. Boom.
I was just going to say, can you imagine how thin he would be?
I would be almost as thin as you.
Yeah, exactly. Anthony, help me out here. We're gonna bring this home, and I'm gonna go around the table. Todd already kind of started talking about tactics. You know what we do. In a nutshell, run down a first alarm for you guys. What would occur if we had smoke showing from the 10th floor on the Alpha Division of a high rise, with a regional approach from both Sac Metro, Sac City, and maybe some of the surrounding agencies?
We're going to be up to 8 agencies. You were talking about 2 or 3 or 4. I'm going through my head, and I think it's about 8, first of all. Typically, you're going to have, kind of like Todd said, first an engine, and maybe depending on what they have on arrival, the first couple of units are going to establish fire tech. In other words, they're going to do a combination of Al's base, basically. They're going to initiate attack. They're going to go to investigate, go to the fire floor. The next in is going to go to the panel and see what they've got. They're going to coordinate. And obviously, those two engines are going to start initiating a water supply to that, to the appropriate standpipe in the street. Truck is probably going to assist them with going and initiating attack. And what that means is we're going to set up worst case scenario. We're going to take hose lines up there. We're going to throw them over our shoulders. We're going to get the systems charged. We're going to go up there and find out what we got, investigate. And when they get up there, they're going to assume that division. When it'll say they get to the 12th floor, yep, we got smoke up here. They're going to go division 12. And then systems will start to get established once that's all confirmed. And at the same time, though, they're going to be thinking about a rapid ascent team on another stairwell. And that's just to kind of break the ice. After that, you know, obviously staging, and we're going to start getting more formalized with logistics and systems and the RAT team and so forth. And multiple alarms are going to be coming in, and we're going to get base going, all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of boilerplate, you know, for the most part. City of Sacramento, when they have their typical high-rise response like you would have, Todd, I won't even know about it. Sometimes I go. I've gone to several of their high-rises, but I have a few working fires downtown because my battalion borders the downtown Sacramento area. So we get down there, and they're real aggressive. I think the last one I went to was like on the, I don't know, 8th or 10th floor of a residential, and it was one of the units was going. They had that sucker knocked out quick. I mean, it wasn't fancy. It was, let's get up there, let's put the sticking thing out, versus, you know, much higher, much more advanced building. That's pretty much it. You know, it's going to be pretty basic. And going back to the regional approach, Sac Metro has always gone with sort of a loose Al's base plan. Because like you were saying, I'm glad you guys have been focusing on the multi-story type of occupancy. We have obviously zillions of those. And what I teach in my workshops, when I teach in our command training centers, it's like a buffet. You can pull certain pieces of the high-rise world out into that 4-story building, into that 7-story building, and apply it. So what we're doing regionally with that SOG team I mentioned is we are essentially just saying, you know what, let's all just officially, once and for all, finally adopt the Sacramento City Regional High-Rise Plan. That's what we're going
to
do.
Seems to work.
It works. Ain't broke. Don't fix it.
Yeah.
And because they are doing, like Todd, they're doing it on a routine basis, a lot of false alarms, but they're getting in that routine where they know what they're going to be facing more than we are, for example. So that's it in a nutshell.
Good, good. And real quick, before I toss it over here to Wes, you mentioned the rapid ascent team. I know that that's a concept that we had implemented my previous organization in that, and we've built it into high-rise policies that we've helped develop elsewhere. And that's an outstanding concept. And if you don't know about it, you can contact Pete Matthews at firehouse.com, and he'll be able to throw you some information from some of the experts that are sitting on the panel. And we'll be able to provide you with some of that. Wes, Santa Rosa, I got a 22-story building. I got smoke and fire showing from the 10th floor, Alpha Division. Give me a quick rundown of what's going to happen in the first 5 minutes.
Okay. If it's a known fire, we have some standardized responses based on address type. Certain buildings get an enhanced response. Obviously, that type of building would have that. It'd be four engines, two trucks, two chiefs on the first alarm, which is well above our usual first. We also use Al's Base. You know, we've taken the Sacramento model and used that a lot in our operations. First in engine, give the report on conditions. They set up for attack. Park the engine, load up their gear, start in. First in truck, same thing. They're going to attack. Our trucks don't go to lobby. That's an engine function. Just because we have two in-service trucks in Santa Rosa, and they are the only in-service trucks in our county. So it's time to put them to work. It's sitting in the lobby is not good for our particular little environment. So first in truck's going to tool up into two-man teams with saws, irons, forcible entry equipment, all that type of thing. Yeah, we'll grab the Knox box keys. But if the keys work, great. If they don't, we need to break into the place. We're ready to do that. Second in engine takes lobby and sets up water source and starts doing accountability. Third engine's going to the floor, either the fire attack floor for backup or the floor above, and start searching, as with the second truck. We'll go to the floor above and start looking for smoke and fire movement, doing search for extension in the building, depending on where it is, what type of building, what systems it has, all those kinds of things. But obviously the first new engine company or first new chief, based on the report, is going to start striking alarms because we need people. We don't have that 30, 40 man response or person response, so it'll be an automatic third alarm, and then they'll start calling mutual aid, both to backfill the stations and to start building up the base to get people into that, and then we just start plugging people in. So the first 5 minutes is basically setting up and going up for fire attack, and then bringing in the people and start filling in the boxes, if you will. Like you said, you pick the pieces you need. Getting a staging area set up, getting a treatment and triage area. If it's a residential occupancy, what kind of victims are we going to find on the way up? How are we going to manage them and get them down? RAT team going up, you know, that'll be of the second alarm companies. Start somebody up another stairwell to see exactly what's going on while the first alarm is basically going to fire attack to try and compartmentalize and hold this thing.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. You know, we mentioned Al's Base a couple times, and obviously, the godfathers of the development of Al's Base, Chief DeFeo, Chief Gillis, for many, many, many years teaching everybody throughout the United States and California that concept, and that's worked really well for us. You know, I think that we could continue on talking about high-rise, multi-rise, above-ground firefighting for, you know, another hour, but we're wrapping up the end of the program. I would like to thank each and every one of you for attending and providing us with this. For those of you that would like to have more information on high-rise, multi-rise, above-ground firefighting from any one of our experts, we will be providing you with links to be able to contact these people. All three, including myself, four of the panelists here on the podcast, have had a hand in developing high-rise policies, operations, training plans, and curriculum. So anything we can do to help you out, please feel free to ask. With that, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody, and we're going to end this. This has been a great experience here in San Diego, and we're ending the Firehouse Podcast Live, coming from Firehouse World 2010 in San Diego, and that's it for high-rise firefighting, utilizing the regional approach with Ed Hadfield. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.